Ladies and gentlemen, in the studio today, a special guest, Mr. Edward Botha, consul for the Republic of South Africa in San Francisco. And he's come down to Los Angeles to be on this broadcast today and to answer some questions which, on your behalf and in your interest, I shall ask him. I'll be back in just a moment with my guest.
The Center for American Studies presents Dr. Stuart McBurney on the Voice of Americanism. This nationwide program stands for free enterprise and freedom under God. Now, Dr. McBurney and his analysis of the news.
Mr. Botha, one of the things that has concerned us most about the Arab-Israeli war is that I, as the speaker on this broadcast and writer of its publications, saw that the real issue of the war was not Arab revenge or the recovery of Arab territory, that these were mere surface reasons. Strategically speaking, the reason for the war was that Russia wanted the Suez Canal open. Do you agree with that?
It'll be almost impossible for me as a South African to really say what the prime reason for it is. I do know that the opening of the Suez Canal falls very much to the liking of Russia, most definitely.
Now, is that not going to throw a whole new light on the strategic defense problems of a lot of African nations?
You might recall, Dr. McBurney, that for many years now, South Africa has said and has warned and has called on the United States, too, that the Russian fleet is experiencing a tremendous buildup in the Indian Ocean.
Yes, but they had to go clear around Africa.
They had to go clear around Africa, and they had to fly the Cape Coast.
Exactly.
And now with the opening of the Suez Canal, of course, that means that within a couple of hours they can move into the Indian Ocean, whereas it would have taken a couple of days around the Cape.
You mean more than 40 days from the Black Sea around the Cape?
So what we have now really is a much greater maneuverability into the Indian Ocean, which is, of course, a very important
area.
All right,
let's talk about bases. With the United States, and I know you're an official of your government, so you can't... look, if you don't want to answer this, just say no comment. The United States were willing to have a naval base in South Africa in order to keep the balance of power. Would that have any kind of acceptance in terms of at least a discussing point with the people of South Africa?
Well, apart from going to say no comment, I think that we would be open to discuss the possibility. Well,
ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard something terribly important. I wish you'd just remember back the last 30 seconds of this broadcast and reflect upon what was just said. Now let's go on to something else. Do you have any oil in South Africa?
We have a tremendous search for oil program at this stage. I don't want to say we haven't found anything, but nothing has been found.
No major
really.
Field?
No major field has been found. We have one advantage, that we have unlimited supplies of coal.
Well, you're one of the few nations in the world that does. We have the biggest supply of coal in the world, don't we, I guess, the United
yes,
States?
Yes, I think you do.
And Germany has some. But you have a lot of it, too.
Yes, we have a high-grade coal, very high-grade.
Now, that coal could be, of course, turned into gasoline very easily. The Germans did it in World War II and ran a whole war on it, so therefore it certainly can be done. And I hear rumors that you've gotten a new breakthrough on that.
It's not rumors, it's fact. There are the two processes of coal gasification, one American and one German. Neither of them are really financially worthwhile to do on a large scale. So South Africa came up with a third possibility. And we are now producing for the last couple of years gasoline from coal. And
can you do it economically?
It's being done economically to the point where America and other countries are now seeking South African advice on how to do it. And we are actually sending our experts to many countries in the world now to teach them how to do it, to put up the plants and to start producing oil from coal.
Now, I was in South Africa last, October, November, on the way back from Rhodesia, and I was tremendously impressed with the almost American-like degree of progress. Honestly, I couldn't have told the difference between Johannesburg and a good big city like Toronto, Montreal, or one might even say Amarillo, Texas, or one of the larger, well, a smaller Houston, for instance. They all look alike today. You sent some products this way. You sent Dr. Christian Bernard. Is that how you pronounce it?
Bernard, yes.
And he's the world's greatest heart surgeon, and he was a pioneer. I think you had Gary Player, who was a well-known golfer, athlete. Now you're going to send us some experts on how to take advantage of our enormous coal supplies to solve the fuel crisis.
Not only that. We have another point on the fuel crisis in our favor, too, that we have large deposits of high-grade uranium. And South Africa has also developed a new method of enriching uranium, the only one available in the world. And it is now been proved by our pilot plant that we can produce enriched uranium at well more than 30% cheaper than any other country.
Now,
can
does
do
that go in the direction of fusion or fission?
We are using it at this stage entirely just for energy purposes. We are not in the not thinking in terms of
nuclear war. Thinking of nuclear war, thinking that there are two kinds of power plants, the fission and the fusion. And the difference is between them that one is a breeder that breeds more and more energy. The other uses energy. And in the long run, the fusion is expected to be the best for the world. And I thought perhaps that was...
No, I don't know which way it goes. And we don't have at this stage a nuclear power station yet. We are working...
Are you working on one?
Yes, we are.
You are. Well, now, South Africa has a lot to offer the world. There's no question about it. It is one of the most progressive nations in the world. And, of course, any time you mention South Africa favorably, immediately the race question pops up. We've already dealt with, at least listening to your explanation of how you've dealt with the problem. Let's return to it, though, because I think that in our discussion on the last broadcast, we were not quite complete. What is the future, in your judgment, as a young man, of apartheid in South Africa?
I think the future is just that we would see a further unfolding of the whole program of apartheid. Some people think apartheid is a cut-and-dried case where you have a beginning and an end, and that's it. Apartheid is born out of 300 years of experience living in a plural society with more than one nation there. And the whole program is a program of development for each nation into full autonomy. So I see the future of South Africa as a very bright future. South Africa has no aggressive tones. We're not thinking in terms of annexing territories or taking other people's land away from them. We are thinking in terms of developing and building South Africa into a strong country. Our know-how and our resources and our money that we have, including our gold, almost 80% of the free world's gold, will be put to use of our neighboring countries. Anybody, we offered it to all our neighboring states. Non-aggression pacts, trade pacts, negotiation pacts, in all fields. And we really want to form in Southern Africa a sort of interdependence upon each other and a group of nations who cooperate.
Now, would this idea or theory have any sense to it? I'm sure it's been discussed. A federation of South Africa, in taking into account that, say, each of the major nations, black or white or whatever, would elect people to a government who then would form a federation in there. Would South Africa, as it is at present, white-dominated and so forth, be in favor of a kind of federation, a British Empire on a small scale?
Well, there's actually a difference between federation and commonwealth, or interdependence and cooperation between states. A federation has a few dangers in it, in that, depending on numbers, you can have minority members who would then be overruled on a federation basis. I do not think South Africa is very favorably disposed toward a federation. We are, however, interested in forming almost like a common market idea, rather, where we can pool our resources and pool our labor and pool our know-how, and where we can assist each other. At this stage already, as I said, we do extend foreign aid and assistance to independent nations around us and on a very large scale to the nine black nations in South Africa, and we have given this promise that this would continue even after their independence.
Now, we haven't discussed the Indians who live there in South Africa. They're very big, aren't they? Because that's where Mahatma Gandhi came from, originally.
Yes. Well, they're not very big, number-wise, about 500,000, 600,000. It is interesting that on the African continent, it is only South Africa where the Indians have citizenship.
Isn't that weird? In all the black nations where they fuss a great deal about racist behavior attitudes on the part of Rhodesia and South Africa, they've kicked the Indians out by wholesale lots. General Amin is the worst example. But you haven't.
No, we've given them citizenship in South Africa.
What status do they have there?
They have an Indian council which administers all their needs. And the council then is in very close cooperation with the South African government and the South African parliament regarding the overall picture of the future of the Indians. It's also their program that we have embarked on socio-economic development for the Indians. Most of them were laborers and
traders. Are they permitted the integration with the whole society, or do they have an apartheid part too?
No, they have an apartheid part too. Culture and religion plays a very important part, of course, in the Indian community, where they do not really bring anybody from outside into their community. Most of them are Hindus, and there's a large number of Muslims among them too. So that sort of puts them on the side.
You have a whole bunch of problems, and I'm sure that anybody of any race in South Africa would say you've got a bunch of problems because you've got an enormous strata-like society with all different shades and so forth. We have it here. I'm not sure that we have solved ours any better. I don't think we have any room for self-righteousness here. What do you think?
Well, my answer to that would be just that I agree with you that South Africa has many problems, and we acknowledge that we face those problems. We learn, we watch and learn from other nations too, especially the bigger nations. But I do think that that there's one thing in the favor of South Africa, and that is that we are open for constructive criticism. And we have said it so many times that if other nations have the same problems as we have and have solved their problems, they are more than welcome to come and give us the solution to our problem.
Well, one question now. Are black people trying to get into South Africa or get out?
We have, at any given moment, about 600,000 blacks from outside South Africa who are legally working in South Africa, and an unknown quantity, some have estimated to more than 1 million, who illegally cross the borders to come and work in South Africa.
So they don't apparently find it so repressive as some of our liberals say.
Now, we have a problem, actually, of people illegally crossing the border to come and work in South Africa.
Can an African leave your country without fear of some reprisal?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Of course, I knew that. I was setting you up for that one. But it was a friendly setup. Our guest today, Mr. Edward Botha, the consul of the Republic of South Africa in the western part of the United States in San Francisco. I hope that during these three broadcasts that we have had, that you have gained new insights into a country that is very friendly to the United States. I don't know of any two nations that ought to be better friends than we. Is that right?
Well, we come from the same fabric. The Dutch who settled the East Coast and built the first mud fort at the Herengracht, which is now known as Broadway in New York, was exactly the same people.
Hey, that's right. We did have the Dutch did settle a fort.
They did. They built the same fort on the Herengracht in Cape Town. So
about the same time?
About the same. About 30 years after the Pilgrim Fathers began it, we started that.
Well, our guest, as I say, Mr. Botha, we're very grateful to you for coming. In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, help me to keep the truth on the air and in print and before the American people. And I'd like the privilege of sharing back a part of what you make possible in our new publication called 1974, The Year of the Terrorist. Believe me, that's not an overstatement, and it's coming nearer to you every day. I'll show you why and how, and perhaps what to do about it. So get this publication. It will be sent free to those who help support the broadcast, and I hope you'll write us today. Dr. McBurney, Voice of Americanism, Glendale, California, 91209. Goodbye, and God bless you.
The Center for